Exquisite.
Well, welcome back, everybody. It's been a little bit.
Howdy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a few weeks here, a couple weeks, something. Feels good to be back.
Yeah, we had a couple weeks where you know, people either weren't feeling good or it was mainly that, actually. We just weren't feeling too great and didn't want to put out a lethargic episode, but we're back and we've got tons of topics. Ryan, you want to start us off? Or was that Adam? Adam, you want to start us off?
Yeah. I don't, but I think Adam does.
Yeah. So just a follow-up from what we talked about a year ago, it seems. The helicopter did finally fly on Mars. The last time we talked about it, they had to reschedule it. Somebody had mud butt or something. But anyway, so the helicopter flew and it made its way like 10 feet up off the ground. And I believe it flew for like less than a minute or something. I haven't seen a whole lot of when they were going to reschedule it, but it did finally take off. It made its way.
Did your rafflecopter go swah, swah, swah? Does anybody get that? No,
I get that.
Vaguely remember that.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. They're supposed to have some more flights, right? Or did you just say that?
Yeah, they're scheduling to do more, I believe. And they're tinkering around with... they converted carbon dioxide into oxygen and... They're playing around with a lot of different toys, it seems like, but it's interesting that they were able to get it to hover around the way they wanted to. I believe from what I was reading, it's very difficult to get the helicopter to actually coordinate the right directions the way they wanted it to. So success for them.
Yeah, because the atmosphere on Mars is so thin, it takes a lot to give it enough lift to fly, is what I understand. But at the same time, like, I don't know, what is the gravity difference between here and Mars? There's a bit, right? Ryan's
searching it.
62%.
Okay, so they get like a 40% help.
Yeah.
I don't know how that works out, but yeah, pretty cool. So we got some more space news.
Yeah, other than... Dogecoin going to the moon.
Oh God!
Just kidding. Just kidding. We don't have to talk about that. Yeah. So we have pretty cool news coming. There is going to be the first all civilian crew going to space aboard one of SpaceX Dragon ships. I guess, is it a ship?
It's a rocket.
The rocket,
the Dragon, what you call it, like, the Dragon capsule is on the Falcon rockets, right?
That's what it is. Yep, the Dragon capsule on the Falcon.
It's a friendship.
Yep. So pretty cool story, I think, because of the people that were chosen. So the main person who kind of won, I guess, or really was chosen to get these seats. Is a billionaire, of course, typical, gotta have some money, right, to do stuff like this. So he's, a billionaire who started a payments company. I forget the name of the payments company. It'll be in that article that we post too. But, yeah, he basically got the four seats, from SpaceX and decided to do a little bit different of a thing instead of just like selling the seats. They decided to give three of them, because, and it says this in the article, he was like, I don't just want this to be a bunch of fishing buddies going on a joyride or something, right? Like, it's actually, you know, meaningful to send some civilians. So they will have like an entrepreneur in one of the seats, but the three other seats, so one of them is to a 29-year-old girl, so she will be the youngest person ever to go to space. And what's cool about her story is she was a cancer patient at St. Jude in like 2002 when she was like 10 years old, I think it was 10 or 11, and was cured, had to have like a metal rod put in her leg as part of her her treatment and everything. And then she became a nurse now at St. Jude. So fast forward some odd years, and she's now 20 years, whatever it is. She's now a nurse at St. Jude. And a lot of the whole point of this has been to raise money for St. Jude. And so the guy who did the billionaire who's like setting all this up, he had given like $100 million to St. Jude. And then part of this is to raise another $200 million for St. Jude. It's using this as a fundraiser. So yeah, really cool that she's going. Another person is a science teacher who wanted to be an astronaut for a long time, was in NASA's program and was passed over to go to space. So missed her opportunity. And so now she's won that opportunity again. So it's pretty cool. And then the final person is an engineer from Seattle, and he had donated to St. Jude and won it in a raffle, just like as if one of us were to just go online and donate money, and he totally won it. It's pretty cool. So yeah, I think it's gonna be really cool to, if it goes well, obviously, like there's always that side of things, and it'd be cool to see where this goes in the future.
You know, it's slightly off topic here, but it's always cool to see the stories of those who, like for instance in St. Jude, those who recovered and then became part of giving back, especially in that way, a nurse, someone who can relate to the children that are there. I think that's really neat. It says a lot about the service.
Yeah, that's one thing that... Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Yours makes more sense in context. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's one thing that she said was she just wants to, show the other kids, like, you can do this, give them like a shot of hope kind of thing. Like, look at what I'm now doing kind of after going through treatment here at St. Jude and working here, and now I'm going to space. So, yeah.
I was just going to ask if they're just orbiting and coming back. Is that the mission?
Yeah, I couldn't find in a ton of the details on the mission itself, like launch date or like what they're going to be doing. I'm assuming probably some light experimentation, right? Just to get the experience, but we'll see.
Yeah, that's really cool. They didn't pick me. I didn't know it was a thing. Kind of disappointed. I still have my rejection email from NASA.
But hey, that's a cool thing. You should get that printed and framed. Like,
yeah.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
That's right. I took mine. So, speaking of taking shots, Signal has been on fire recently. I don't think we talked about it because we've been away for a bit. But a couple weeks ago, Signal, it was about 2-3 weeks now. I think it was about 3 weeks. Signal had gotten a hold of Cellebrite's toolkit, for lack of a better word, that allows them to unlock phones that are locked, basically, for law enforcement and other shady governments. And probably our government too. But anyway, so that was really cool. They kind of did like a takedown post against Cellebrite, and it was really funny. And so, without going into the details on that, the follow up to it is the other. I guess I don't know. They posted the other day. They had bought a bunch of Instagram ads, and to prove a point on how much it's kind of like a good viral marketing campaign too, right? To prove how much information Facebook has on you and, other people too, but Facebook in particular, set up these ads, and in the ads they put like the demographic identifiers in it for the person that the ad would be served to, right? So, for example, one of them is It's just a, I'll put this one in the album art, so you can, or the show art, so you can see it. But it says, you got this ad because you're a teacher, but more importantly, you're a Leo and single. This ad used your location to see you're in Moscow. You like to support sketch comedy, and this ad thinks you also do drag. Everybody's silently laughing.
I want to know how it thinks. Okay, because now I'm worried that I want to see mine. Because that'll be interesting. Like, how did it connect those dots to be? You know, I could see the others, obviously, like where you're at, but drag, like, well, how does it get there?
I don't know. Maybe they watch RuPaul's Drag Race in their browser, which has been logged into Facebook. And so Facebook sees that you're watching RuPaul's Drag Race. And so, or maybe you're buying very large women's dresses, but they know you're a man, you know, like there's innumerate ways that they could determine this information. And that was the great thing about these ads, is that they highlight all the things that Facebook doesn't want you to know that they know about you, because it's creepy. You know, they put out ads saying, like, oh, with app tracking transparency, they have a pop-up in their app now that's like, help us stay free and help us help small businesses. Turn on app tracking transparency. It's like, give me a break. Like, all you want to do is just mine my information so that you can serve ads and become an ad broker for other companies and get money. Like, you don't care about small businesses. So yeah, there's like three or four different ones in here. Like, let's see if I can find another. Well, they're all pretty funny, but yeah, here's one. You got this ad because you're a K-pop loving chemical engineer. This ad used your location to see you're in Berlin, and you have a new baby and just moved, and you're really feeling those pregnancy exercises lately. Yeah, it's like, yeah, whoa. Super creepy. So, you know, Facebook didn't like this, so they banned Signal's ad account. So I guess they can't use ads on Facebook anymore. But I love the shade that Signal has been throwing, and they post all of these different posts on their blog, on their website, because it really just, like, I mean, sure, it's a little bit marketing, but they're walking the walk, right? Like, all their stuff is end-to-end encrypted. And privacy is their number one thing. That's why journalists all over the world use Signal, because it's encrypted and they can get information and know that it's secure for their sources. So anyway, I thought this was pretty funny. I don't use Signal. I have it on my phone. I don't use it because nobody else I know uses it, but I think it's a really cool service. And I really like the things that they're doing on their blog here recently.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I rarely use Facebook, and I always do it in, like, the, as much as I can in the Firefox, like, you know, garden or whatever their little fenced tabs that they have now, where it basically, like, blocks all the tracking data, which is nice. So I like this. Let's take them down, right? Let's, throw a couple of shots at Facebook and see what happens. Maybe something will change. I mean, I doubt it, because, you know, money talks, but we'll see.
Yeah, so talking about taking people down and exposing the ugly truth, I guess. So this week is the first week of the Apple versus Epic court battle extravaganza. And I think we talked about this maybe when we started the show, somewhere around there. But basically the gist of it is why they are in a, why they're in court is Epic wanted to have their own payment processing in Fortnite. Apple said, no, you can't do that. So what Epic decided to do is they made this like ad, like this little short that made fun of Apple in their 1984 ad campaign and basically made Apple look like the big, bad, creepy monopoly people. And then before they released that, they had a stealth update in Fortnite that enabled their own payment processing remotely, knowing that this would make Apple mad and have them pull the app from the store. Then Epic could play the victim and show this ad and say, oh, hey, look at all those terrible things that Apple is doing. And, you know, boohoo, we're poor, pitiful people, even though they're like a huge company. And apparently in the first 2 years had made $9 billion off of Fortnite on iOS. So, yeah, that's how much they made. So how much did Apple make? Yeah, $3 billion, I think is how that math would work out. Somewhere around there.
$9 billion?
Yeah, $9 billion just on iOS alone.
I was going to say, just that one platform. That's insane.
Yeah, so they took a, I guess, theoretically a $9 billion hit by, you know, fighting this fight. So anyway, fast forward to today. Here we are. And there's nothing like really of note, as far as like, oh, it sure does look like, you know, Epic's winning or Apple's winning. All of the analysis that I've seen of the situation is that legally Apple is, on pretty sure footing here, with the way that the law stands now. Because they basically offered Epic a deal, you know, basically said like, hey, you can be in our store, but you have to play by these rules. You know, do you want to agree to that? And, you know, Epic did for a while, but then they said, all right, we're out. Now, if Apple had said, no, we don't want Epic in this store, you can't be in the store no matter what. Then Apple is on with current law. Apple is, you know, would be in trouble then. So everything that I've seen, people are saying, you know, Apple's going to win this pretty sure-handedly. In whoever wins, we're probably not going to see a resolution to this court case for a while because this isn't in higher courts yet. I think this is in San Diego. So Google just finished their spat with Oracle, and that started 10 years ago. So we've got a long time to talk about Apple versus Epic, unless, and I think this is what Epic's game is to make Apple look so bad, because Apple has a carefully groomed public image of their company, you know, not to even talk about their products. And the kimono has kind of come open in this, this court case. There's been so many different leaks and documents and filings that just show like how gross and like kind of, think that they deserve everything, like all the money and all the credit for everything. There's a lot, and that that Epic is kind of playing a PR game so that they know that I'm assuming that they know they probably can't win the court case, but they're going to fight the fight so that way they can drag out all this dirt, make Apple look bad, and then Congress. Not that they do much, but Congress could, you know, see this and say, okay, we've got to change the rules. We've got to change the law, because even though this is legal, it's not right. It's not good for consumers or, you know, whoever, because their argument is like, hey, consumers are paying more because Apple's taking a 30% cut. There's certain business types of businesses that can't operate in this system because there's not enough margin. for Apple to take a cut and for that business to stay profitable and stay into business. So, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, what Microsoft has a similar model, right, for their store, but they take a lot less of a cut from them. Do you remember?
Yeah, so I think we talked. Yeah, about so Microsoft was taking now specifically games. I think I don't know about their entire store, but the article I read, I think mainly spoke about games. But they took 30%. Like so, Nintendo, PlayStation, Microsoft Xbox Store, Steam, Apple, and Google, and Microsoft's
Epic.
Yeah. Well, I guess Epic. And Microsoft's App Store, they all take 30%. That is the industry standard for this is where you get weird, but like consoles and stores. And so up till recently, that was the case. I think last week, Microsoft changed so that they only take 12% from games on the Windows App Store. I don't know what it's called. Windows Marketplace, maybe. That does not, it is still 30% on the Xbox Store on the console.
Okay. But still, that's, I mean, showing like the willingness, I think,
yeah,
from other companies to like start to drop some of those margins to, hopefully get on the good side of developers.
Well, it's pure profit. There was a, let's see if I can find it. I can't find it, but there was a tweet by Mark Gurman that discussed some documents that came out, and basically somebody that Epic hired analyzed Apple's like basically their profits. I wish I had it in front of me. So Epic hired an analyst that had gotten in contact with the people that do Apple's taxes, basically, and were able to get some information. And basically what he had calculated is that Apple's profit margins on the App Store are 78%. So they make 78% profits. So they just make a crap ton of money off of this. It's just a free money generator for them. And I don't know, as a developer, I'm, it sucks.
Yeah. I think it's pretty crazy. But I mean, everyone was willing to do it because the iOS platform was such a main hit for camaraderie. You know, if you're trying to get everything out there, like iOS is the main thing that's in people's pockets. And I feel like maybe that's leveled a little bit with like the Android Galaxy and stuff like that. But for the most part, you're going to land probably 1 in 3 people has got an iPhone.
Yeah. In the US, I believe it's the most popular smartphone, but in other parts of the world, especially Europe, Android is the most popular smartphone. To your point about, Apple being like the iPhone being the phone to have. Here's the thing. Like when the iPhone came out, it was amazing. It still is amazing. I love my phones. I love all my iPhones that I have for testing.
My iPhones.
I didn't mean to say that. But I got all kinds of different devices to test on. Anyway, I love my iPhone.
Bougie.
But when it first came out, it was very expensive. After 6 months, they dropped the price $200. And when it first came out, you could not write apps for it. Now, people, developers who had Mac developers jailbroke them and realized that everything running on it was pretty similar to what was on the Mac. And so they reverse engineered the APIs, the private APIs, and wrote the first Twitter client ever for it, amongst other things. And so that became a popular, you know, thing to do with your phone. Apple, when they first came out, weren't going to let developers, you know, third-party developers write apps for it. Steve Jobs didn't want anybody to touch it. Like, he just, like, look at this beautiful thing that we made. You don't need to install, like, other apps on it. You just, you know, kind of like an iPod, right? You don't install other apps on an iPod. It does what it does, and that's it. I don't think that the iPhone, now, they sold, like, web apps. Like, oh, you should, web apps are the awesome thing. If you want to build an app for this, you can make a web app. Everybody knows a web app's not the same. And then Apple did too. Eventually they came around because Scott Forstall talked Steve Jobs into letting them write, allow third parties on the phone and creating the App Store. If that never happened, the phone would not be what it is today. Apple likes to say, like, oh, look at this beautiful thing, this wonderful stuff that we've given you, and you should give us all this money, and we'll take 70% or 30%, but we'll take a cut, and then you can have whatever's left. The thing is like, it's a symbiotic relationship. Developers, different companies have created these amazing things that you can do on your phone. Apple hasn't done all of that. They've done some things. They've provided the APIs, but they provide the APIs so that all the other developers can build these amazing things for the device that they're selling for $1,000. Nobody would buy the phone if it didn't have Facebook on it. You know how many people would go buy an Android phone if you couldn't, like, use the Facebook app on the iPhone? Or Instagram, or name any popular social network, Twitter, anything. So it sucks because they're high on their own supply, is what it is.
That's kind of always been the case, in my opinion. And that's what's always made me have a hard time with a lot of the Apple products. It's always felt like you were buying the brand more than you were the product. So.
Well, yeah, sure, you are buying the brand, but, you know, it's not always the case, but they don't put out crappy products, right? Like, when you buy an Apple product, it's, on the whole, a really good product. They've taken time in designing it, engineering it. They don't put out crap, because if they put out crap, nobody's going to buy it, right? But with the App Store, they're not living up to their expectations of what they say they're going to provide from the App Store. They say that they need to have the App Store to make it secure. Well, the App Store is not what makes it secure. It's the software architecture of the phone and the certificate signing of the applications. That's what makes it secure. There's like tons of scam apps on the App Store. Some of them look like, there was one, if I remember recently, that looked, it was like a kid's game. But then when you took it into, like, I don't know, another country, I can't remember the country, it became a gambling app. Like, it became a casino.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah, one.
I think, yep. I sent it to you.
Yep.
So it's based off of, yep, the location, the app changes. And so, like, Apple isn't living up to what they are promising. And I think that's the difference between their devices and products that they've sold and what they market them as, and then what is delivered versus what they're marketing the App Store as and what they're actually delivering. They only have, now this sounds like a lot, kind of, but in the grand scheme of things, I don't think this is a lot at all, considering how many apps are on the App Store. They only have a staff of 500 people reviewing these apps. Which, I mean, if you think about it in terms of, like, any other company, That's a lot of people. But in terms of every single app that is submitted to the store, they only have 500 people. That'd be like saying that only 500 people look at the websites on the internet. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many websites. If you are going to review them, you need huge amounts of resources to do that. So anyways, yeah.
Well, what's interesting is a lot of the things that are still coming out, I thought all the stuff that was leaked about Sony not wanting to support crossplay and things of that nature, I thought that was very interesting. I think most of us kind of suspected what was happening behind the curtains on that situation, but it was actually kind of funny to see that data getting thrown out there of like proof of, hey, Sony was really kind of holding back and they did not want to play this game at all.
Yeah. So to give a little backstory there, it came out that, you know, Sony was the only gaming console that wasn't offering crossplay for games, and a spreadsheet, I guess, was part of the, so like all the stuff that's leaking out is coming from like the discovery and fact finding part of the lawsuit that happens right before it starts. And so all the, like, both sides went around to all these different companies and gathered all kinds of like documents as evidence to prove whatever their case was. And one of these was the Sony thing, and Sony wasn't offering crossplay. And who was it? Was it Fortnite? Was it Epic that went to them, Adam? Yeah. And said like, hey, look, we want crossplay. Our players want crossplay. And basically what it came down to is Sony said, okay, fine. We're going to have a crossplay policy now. So if a game wants to have crossplay, they can. But if Sony doesn't make up a certain percentage of the player base playing a crossplay game, then that developer, for lack of a better term, has to pay Sony a profit share of the percentage of players who aren't playing on a Sony console. So that way, they wouldn't have any kind of imagined, I'm going to say, revenue loss, because people weren't buying a PlayStation to play a game that they already had with their friends on another console. It doesn't really make sense if you think about it, but that's how that they twisted the arms of everybody and said, okay, fine, you can have crossplay.
I mean, there's pocket communities, right? And there's the groups that swear by Sony and the groups that swear by Xbox. And I won't say Nintendo, because there's not really what you call a community for communication, I should say, with Nintendo. And I say that because Nintendo is my favorite. And I hate that there's not really what you call a party system and communication that actually works.
They should buy Discord.
Yeah, really. I mean, the thing is like, when you have those pockets of community, it was a thing where I could see the profits would go sky high for certain developers. Call of Duty is a great example. I've known many people that have bought Call of Duty on three different platforms, PC, Xbox, and PlayStation, all because they have friends on each category that play. Now, that's a waste of a lot of damn money, because you're buying the same game, you're getting nothing more out of it other than just being able to play with your buddies on there. So the crossplay, it was a huge factor, because now I could just buy one copy on whichever one I liked and we can have a conversation and play. Now, that being said, I don't think anybody was sitting on the front of like, I really want to play Fortnite with my friends and only on the PlayStation. Like, I don't know. I feel like that whole scenario was really weird, but it was more just someone being a sore loser in the corner, in my opinion, of like, I'm just not going to participate with the way that the world is moving. because it doesn't look right on a financial fund for us.
Yeah, I said this the other day, and you all kind of rolled your eyes, but like this court case just shows, like, if you want to be a successful business, you've got to be a jerk. Because, like, so look at it from Sony's perspective. I get it as a business perspective, because, like, say, okay, Ryan, you had a PlayStation, Adam, you had a PlayStation, and I had a Switch, and you two were playing a game, and I could play the game on the Switch, but we couldn't play together. If I valued you all as my friends as much as I do, then if that was the case, I would be forced to spend money and buy a PlayStation, and just so that I could play that game with you all, because you are my friends, and that's the console that you all had. I think that was Sony's argument, and that's why they were like, okay, well, you have to give us profit share of the players that aren't on our console. That's how it makes sense. It's crappy for the players, but to Sony, if you didn't have a Sony console anyway, you're not their customer. So why do they even care about you?
Well, that's the whole thing where I really don't like business and art getting mixed across. And I understand financially it does make sense. I get it. There's money to be made. There's capitalism that runs the show on it. I get it. But at the same time, like, art is art, and for gamers by gamers, you know what I mean? Like, I just wish that the business didn't water down so many different things. And that's what sucked being on the sidelines, seeing this happen, was like, I mean, you see the community just wants this. This is just what the community wants, and the dollar signs aren't looking in your favor. So you're not going to let it happen.
Yeah. I think it's the same thing that Apple is pushing forward, and that's that they view themselves as the platform. And if you want to sell anything, if you want to, then you need to abide by our rules, because we're the platform and we are the most important piece, not the art, not the games, not the users, not the developers. The most important part is the platform. And I think we see that with a lot of tech companies. It's like Twitter. The most important part is the platform, not the content. Facebook, platform, not the content, right? Like, it's the ability to share those things that is the most important thing, and comes first. So you don't have to respect people's privacy. You don't have to respect, you know, what we would consider norms of behavior as a company, I feel like, because it doesn't matter. We're providing you a platform. We're providing you a service. You have to abide by our rules. Yes, you're right. In today's world, the majority of people, if you want to, you know, play the game, yes, you have to be a jerk. I think you can do it in a way to where you are, you know, you have a heart, and you do try to put the people first, and, you know, game, in this instance, you could put games and developers at the forefront and do it the right way. Sure, you're probably not going to make as much money, but how long are you going to last? You know, like, will people, I think it pays off longer to have, you know, a community gather around you as a company versus you just being able to keep the lights on.
It depends on how much money you've made. The more money you have, the more runway you've got, the more you can live to fight another day. So, I mean, you're talking about two different companies here. So let's talk about Apple. Like, Apple's got more money than anybody, so they're fine.
Oh, totally.
Talking about Sony, Adam's beating his head against his microphone. Talking about Sony, I think, like, yeah, you want to be thoughtful and compassionate for your customers, but you can't make everybody happy, because if you did, you would go bankrupt, right? And in this case, I don't know why I'm playing devil's advocate here, but because I agree with you all, like, it sucks as a consumer, as a user, as a person, it sucks. But just putting on my business shoes here, talking about the crossplay stuff, if those, I mean, the point just stands, like if those people didn't have a Sony console, they're not Sony's customers, so they don't give two craps about them. Like, what does it matter, you know?
Yeah.
It sucks for you as the end user of another platform who has a game that your other friend has and that you want to play together. That stinks. But that friction is what Sony wants to try to convert you into a customer by forcing you to play, to buy their console because you want to play with your friend.
Right. And I think this is where this is the, they are trying, just as Apple has, be the company that says, no, this is what you want. Right. Like it's no longer marketing to what people want. It's telling people what they want. And so to me, it's Sony going, no, this is what you want. You want to be with us because this is why we're better. You know, we're this, we're that. Instead of looking at what people truly want and coming down to them and actually like building something that people already want. And I think to me that becomes the rub for me is when it's constantly marketed towards, no, we're going to tell you what you want and this is what we're going to build and that's that. I think that if you as a company came to the other side and said, you know what, we are all about you, I think you would make converts. I feel like you would gather more people by putting cookies on the lower shelf than you are like, hey, no, you don't want a cookie. This is what you really want.
You gotta preach that, but not.
No, she's preaching.
You gotta preach that, but you can't like have that conviction, right? Because then you would make choices that you can't like have 100% that conviction. So that's what Apple does, right? Like they preach it. But then, as we've seen from this case, business-wise, they're sharks. And like in this case with Sony, like why would Sony, just financial sense? It makes no business sense for Sony to say, "Oh, we'll let you play this game on another console." Now, because Sony was coming from a place of strength. Sony was the number one when the PS4 was out, right? They were the most popular, best console. If you look at the reports and the numbers, they were huge, right? And so they were coming from a place of strength. Why would they want to cede their moat of, well, if you want to play with your friends, you have to come to PlayStation? If they were coming from a place of weakness, then they would, where their share of the market was smaller, they would want to have their user base be able to play with other players on different user bases, because if they didn't, their friends would look around and say, I'm the only one with a PlayStation, and go and buy the other console. But coming from a place of strength, where they're the ones that have the most popular, the most sold console, they don't want to open the door that people can leave or it doesn't matter what console they have. They can play with anybody. You see what I'm saying?
I got a flip for you.
All right,
I
do flip. It.
So, all right. So you've got a PlayStation, right? And you play, you tried out Fortnite. You never played it before. Tried it out. Or Apex. We'll even throw Apex out there. So you downloaded it, you installed it, you played it. Everybody's been talking about these games, right? Everybody's been playing them. And they're all playing together. So you're like, you know what? I'm going to join you guys. Oh, I can't play with you all. Let's see. Anybody on the PlayStation with me really play this? Well, maybe one or two. You know what? This game's all about community. And I don't have a community right now, so I'm not going to play this game anymore. Now, Fortnite and Sony Apex didn't care. Both have...
Because Sony didn't make that game.
Well, hold up. But there's microtransactions in these games. And whenever they do those microtransactions, Sony's getting a cut of that, right?
I don't really know, but I believe so.
Yeah. So if that's the case, and they're getting so many bodies that are picking up this game to play it more, they're getting a cut of that doo-doo now when they weren't getting any of it before. So, I mean, sure, you could say you're losing it out of some of these, but they're free-to-play games.
But,
and now you're getting that cut of the micros because now these people want to play it because there's a bigger community, which means they're going to play it more often, which means they're probably going to buy more stuff on it because they're playing it all the time.
Yeah, but in your hypothetical here, you're saying that Sony is coming from a place of weakness where they have less of a share than others on the market. What I'm saying is in the reality of it was, I don't know about currently, is that Sony, and we're going to count the Switch because that's a whole different beast. Sony, between Microsoft and Xbox, had a larger share of the market. They had the more successful console with a larger install base. So it doesn't make sense because they had more players on their platform. Now, okay. I agree with you. If they had a smaller user base, then yes, it makes more financial sense for them to keep their existing player base and hopefully win on other attributes of their console.
Flip night.
We need to move on.
Go, Ryan.
My turn. Hold on. No, listen. So earlier we were talking about the App Store. Steve Jobs did not want anyone to create apps for the iPhone. He wanted to come from a place of, as you say, strength and say, no, we are the market leader. We don't need anyone to make apps. We don't need to allow this because we are number one. And so him putting that forward is Sony. Sony saying, we don't need it. We have the market share. We're the leaders in this place, in this space. We're just going to do it our way and make the money. Then someone comes in and says, hold on. Do you see what's happening here? People are starting to write apps. The appetite is there. We need to capitalize on that, right? He finally saw the dollars and said, oh, you know what? You're right. Actually, the smart money sense is to actually go and allow for the changing culture to take place and get an app store and go from there. And now that has become the behemoth that it is now, that basically, subsidizes all of Apple, it seems. And so when you look at it, it might seem like, okay, this Sony's at that place of strength right now. But fast forward 10 years, let's say Sony didn't allow crossplay at all. They said, nope, we're never going to do it. Where would they be? I think they would actually be crumbled because they didn't strike whenever the culture started to shift.
Okay. Two things. Number one, you're right about what you said. Number two, you had an apples to oranges comparison, no pun intended. To make these a fair comparison would be if Steve Jobs said, we want people to only have apps on our platform. And then everybody else was like, oh, but we want to be able to run Android apps on Android or on the iPhone. And then Steve Jobs said, oh, okay. Then there's no lock-in. That's what I'm saying. That's what crossplay is. It's not the same as so what you're trying to compare.
I'm comparing the culture and the mindset of not letting the market determine what you do is really what it was, right? Like people wanted to do
the market. The developers wanted to give them a PlayStation for $0.
Well, no, that's not what I'm saying at all. Obviously,
no, they just want it to be available to buy at all.
That's right.
That's
want to be able to go pick it up at their Target. Yeah, but no, I think the idea behind it is the same. Yes, the actual outworking is an apple to orange because it's not, hey, bring your Android apps over. But it's still, I think, the concept of what drives the business decisions. Is it, nope, only the dollar, or is it a combination? Or is it future dollars, right? Like, hey, it's going to cost us a lot right now in revenue, lost revenues, but eventually, even if it's, you know, 5 years from now, it's going to pay off in, you know, the community, the culture that we build, the way that people view us as a company. Again, for all this time, we thought Apple was this bright and shiny thing, and turns out sharks running the whole thing, and they actually were thinking more, you know, along the business lines, even with some of those decisions. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Sharks have always been running Apple, but they still make good stuff. But anyway, moving on.
What's the collector do?
Exquisite. Oh gosh.
Lovely, lively discussion, gentlemen, on that.
So, yeah, I think we need to move on. If you enjoyed that diversion, that was this has been week one of 3 weeks of Apple versus Epic. If you didn't like it, well, you probably already turned the podcast off. So let's go ahead and move on. I've got like a bunch of leaks and different interesting things that we didn't even talk about in the show notes. So you can check them out there. Ryan, are you good?
I'm yes, good. You are. I'm good. Oh, he just leaked my name. Oh gosh. Yeah. So on that note, let's get into something a little more happy times. Well, I hope, I don't know yet, but we are going to be doing another media club. So last time we read through the Eternals and enjoyed it. That was great. Loved the discussion that we had around that. And so we're all going to be taking turns kind of choosing some kind of media to go through together, whether that's a book, magazine. Yeah, a magazine. I don't want to say magazine. I meant like comic or graphic novel. Anyway, as we're all going to be taking turns choosing some different media to go through. And this time for our media club, I decided to go with a movie that, as far as I can remember, I loved as a child.
Porky's.
Definitely not Porky's. Definitely not. Anyway, gosh, you just like throw me off.
Maximum trollage.
So trolling after that. Yeah, so I decided to go with a movie that, as far as my memory can tell, I have fond memories of this movie. But it's one of those movies that if you haven't seen since you were a kid, which I haven't watched it in forever, it's one of those that you wonder, does it still hold up? And so I was wondering if this movie still holds up, and that movie is, drum roll please, Neverending Story. So this media club, we will be watching Neverending Story and then discussing it. I think we can probably give everybody a week to watch it. 2 weeks, what do you think?
Yeah, do we want to vary the amount of time we give? Because last time we gave like a month.
Yeah, I mean, this is a movie. It's, what, 2 hours?
Yeah, okay.
I'd say we could probably give it, like, 2 weeks. 2 weeks for everybody? Anyway, I have checked. The movie is available from most streaming services as a rental. It was on HBO Max for a little while, but it is now gone. I don't have HBO. Unfortunately.
I don't have HBO anymore.
Yeah, that's okay.
I did watch that before it disappeared.
Well, be quiet. Don't talk about it yet.
Oh, I'm not going to.
Okay. That's right. I can't wait to revisit the rock monster. So that'll be fun. I hope so. Yeah, take a watch. We will be discussing it in about 2 weeks and see if it still holds up or if it is complete garbage like a lot of our childhood.
Wow. Speak for yourself.
Wow.
Cool beans.
I'm talking about.
Hey, Adam.
Wah, wah.
Get over here.
Yeah. So, anyway. So, Mortal Kombat finally released on HBO Max and in theaters. And it was a very interesting take between what they did in the old movie to what's happened in the video games and kind of piled it all into an original story for this new live action movie. And we'll probably go through what we... Everyone did see it, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'll put my first take out there, and I'll say that I like the movie, and I would probably watch it again. There was definitely some cheesiness or lack of acting in some places, which was somewhat expected. But I will go ahead and say, well, are we doing spoilers? Are we spoiling or not spoiling?
Yeah, we're going to talk about it, so... Spoilers starting now. If you don't want to hear spoilers, skip to the next chapter.
All right. So spoilers. I loved everything about Scorpion Sub-Zero. From the opening part to the ending fight scene to even the every now and then showing up images of Scorpion. Everything that was going on between them two and what they were doing throughout the movie. Awesome. I really wish they would have just did a movie about the two of them, to tell you the truth. However, some of the other stuff, especially like the general that had the hammer, horrible acting. I don't know what was going on there, but that was really, really bad.
I think he was supposed to basically be doing the moves and the sounds that the character does in the game,
I guess. They all did their traditional thing of like having to say their names as their introduction and stuff like that. I was like, okay. But the overall, like the setting, the format, the humor, the fighting choreography, it was all really good. I actually really enjoyed it, and I'll be curious to see how much it improves in the next movie, because there's going to be another one. So, but I did like it. So what's y'all's thoughts?
I really liked it. Yeah. I was kind of nervous from the trailers, seeing Kano's laser eye. But I'm kind of curious to your all's opinions, but like Kano is kind of my favorite character of the movie.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the actor that they got for him was spot on. He was hilarious. He was smart aleck. He was chauvinistic. He thought he was like hot stuff. I thought he was really good. It's weakest characters. Adam, you didn't like the one dude. The side characters that they introduced like really late, I didn't really give too much to because they weren't really that fleshed out. They're like, hey, here's a bunch of characters from the game that are the bad guys or whatever. And, you know, they're basically like little set pieces. Okay. Sonya? I didn't really care for her too much. And Jax was good. His little puny arms were weird until, like, he figured out. Okay, so that's another thing. I haven't played the game. Like, I haven't been really into the games for a long time, basically since Mortal Kombat 3. And so what I thought was interesting in the movie is how they introduced like their abilities as their arcana that they discovered, which is kind of like, if you're like really into Magic the Gathering, you would know that the planeswalkers find their sparks. And so that was kind of a similar thing. So I thought that was pretty cool. You know, so that these people aren't like overpowered all the time. Yeah, but besides Kano, is it Kung Lao? Yeah, he was yeah. Awesome. Yeah, I thought he was really cool. So yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, same thing. I thought Kano was just the epitome of exactly what you think he's gonna be. And I haven't played one of the games in so long. And like the only movie I've seen of the, it was like way back in the 90s, that first Mortal Kombat movie that came out. That was like the only other movie I'd seen, which was funny because after watching this, I was like, oh, let's see what other ones they have on. Because like HBO has like all of the other ones. And you could tell they're just like those like straight to DVD like style movies, which, you know, that's definitely to be expected. Yeah, so same thing. I thought the acting was whatever, but yeah, I thought the fight scenes with Sub-Zero were just incredible. I thought that was so much fun. Especially that end fight scene where just that whole gym is frozen. I was just waiting for just someone to get shattered, though. Like, you know, but I was like, oh, gosh, I was kind of on the edge of my seat. But then just the whole idea of Scorpion, like, dying and going to hell and then fighting his way back to find Sub-Zero, I thought was really cool. And different than what I expected, because I thought the one guy was gonna, his ancestor, I thought he was going to turn out to be Scorpion or something, right? Like he was gonna pick up the mantle and become Scorpion. So I thought it was cool that they took it a little different, you know, direction than you know, what was expected.
Was that guy that you didn't like, Adam, is he actually a character in any of the games?
You know, he might be, but I don't actually recall
him.
I'm
looking at the, to tell you the truth. So the Mortal Kombat 11 roster, that has every character from every game in it, right? No?
No, not every character.
That stinks.
Think.
They need to do that.
I do want to say, like, with Sub-Zero, I was watching like the making of stuff like that, and they were talking about how fast that guy was, like in his martial arts. So they were like, hey, you gotta slow down because he was just that damn good. But what I liked about him was I loved the way even his eyes and stuff looked. So like when he was roaming around and doing his thing, like they made him have like that kind of that persona. It was neat. It was really cool to see him in that style. Although I'm with Ryan where I really would like to have seen the story arc where he was a good guy. But I like what they did. I mean, it was definitely different. And this new Cole character actually ended up working out, in my opinion.
Yeah, I really liked that character. I didn't realize that, because like I said, I hadn't played in a while. I didn't realize that he wasn't in any of the games. And I went to go look him up immediately because I was like, oh, he's pretty cool. And realized that he was an original character. And so there's a lot of, I think, requests online to like add him to the game. Or like, are they going to add questions? Like, are they going to add him to the game? Because, you know, he had his weapons, he had his ability. Like, they basically designed a new character just for the movie. So, yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. Something else I really enjoyed is some of the deep cut, like, references in the movie. Like, there was a poster in Sonya's like red string room where she had like all the different like Mortal Kombat combats, I guess is what they were calling them, from the ages, all mapped out there. It was like a picture of a Native American, and that was Nightwolf from the game. So it was cool, just to see those different, references,
which makes me think that I guess he probably won't be in the movies because they're seeing it as something that's already passed. So all in all, good movie.
Yeah, so speaking of media that was definitely worth watching, Falcon Winter Soldier wrapped up with episodes 5 and 6. I know since we had a couple weeks off, we weren't able to discuss those, so we're gonna do that tonight. So yeah, any first thoughts on how things were wrapped up? I know we all were a little either the emotions range from worried or confused or didn't know how the heck that thing was going to wrap up so quickly. Yeah, what's y'all's thoughts?
I mean, I really liked it. I was surprised to see it all wrap up the way that it did, and that it actually wrapped all the story up. It seemed like so many things were happening, and that it was going to be like a, well, we're just going to finish one story arc and maybe the rest of it will get hit in another MCU universe, you know, film or show. But they did, and they did a great job, and they represented the characters really well. And I'll still say one of my favorite things for some reason was when the truck blew up with the, at the very end, had all the rest of super soldiers in there, and the butler blew it up. It took me a second. I was like, oh man, Zemo. Like, that's so crazy.
Yeah. I'm really happy, with how they wrapped it up. And, like when, in what I really liked is at the end of it, if you kept watching, like after the, like once the trailers were done, instead of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, they changed it to Captain America and the Winter Soldier. That I really like what they did with Sam Wilson's suit. It's the same type of suit design as in the comics when he's the all new Captain America. Yeah, I think it's a really good thing in general for us to have a black Captain America. I think they kind of drove that point home. I liked how he had made a monument happen for Isaiah. Is it, what was his last name? Isaiah Thomas?
That's the basketball player, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, so anyway, yeah, he made the monument, or had the monument made in the museum for Isaiah to honor him, so that his legacy and the things that he did for his country wouldn't be forgotten. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, it was a touching ending. It had a lot of weight to it, and I was extremely happy to see Sam become Captain America. I kind of wondered there for a little bit if they weren't going to let it happen, if they were going to be like, okay, well, this just needs to die. And I really didn't want them to do that. So I was happy to see what really happened at the end.
Yeah. I mean, having read the comics and knowing that he was Captain America, I wouldn't say that I knew that they were going to make him Captain America, but I had expectations that that was going to happen and would have been disappointed otherwise. They made, John Walker the U.S. agent, just like I thought. I think that is going to be an interesting character, especially Val. I think that's a new character, best I can tell, because I tried to do some research on her, and there is another Val in Marvel, but not in the role that she is. She's basically, I think,
like his PR or something.
Kind yeah, of, she's right? Like his agent, basically. Yeah. But yeah. In Marvel, Val is like the name of Mr. Fantastic's daughter. So I really don't think it's going to be the same character. I think they're just kind of reusing the name. I was kind of pissed that they made Sharon Carter freaking
the power broker.
Yeah, but I can't wait to see her injected with some chemicals that make her a giant muscular man, bald man, like the power broker is in the comics. He gets infused with some like steroids or something as punishment. Somebody tries to get back at him, so he turns into this like big beefcake who can't like move or walk or anything because his muscles are so big. Yeah, it's a big, stupid, funny thing. But
maybe that's why they decided to go a different direction.
Maybe.
Just because a big, stupid thing. Yeah.
It's just disappointing, though, because Steve liked her, you know, and what was all there. Hey, and
you don't know yet. You don't know yet.
Don't know what?
It ain't over. It's just the beginning. I think this is just her. Like, there's always going to be, there's always ulterior motives. And even, like, she did what she needed to do to survive. She became the power broker in in that realm of the world, and now she's coming over to back to the U.S. And sure, maybe some of that's coming with her, but I think underneath all that hard exterior is a gentle person,
full of muscle.
Exactly. Just gotta get that injection.
No, yeah, I mean,
no, I thought that was interesting.
They basically said, like, hey, she's gonna be spying from inside SHIELD now.
Yes.
But here's the question, like, who is she talking to on the phone?
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. Talking to Tony Stark's ghost.
That's so
she's talking to.
The French dude that was in the last two episodes that got popped. Okay, so he was the guy who got his ass whooped by Captain America at the beginning of the Avengers, right on the boat.
I don't know, because I don't remember that. But I know who Batroc is as a character.
I'm pretty sure, because that was his whole point of going after Sam, right? Was, like, payback. I think that's what...
Well, like, Sam got him at the very beginning of the season.
That's right, yeah.
But if I remember right, I think he was the guy that Captain America fought on the boat whenever they were trying to get the hostages off.
Oh, I remember that now. Yes, that was him. Having been secretly recruited by Nick Fury to go lead the hijacking of the Lemurian Star, Batroc was defeated by Captain America and taken into SHIELD's custody. So, yes, that was him. And he's a minor villain in the comics. No, we haven't talked about it on the show. Yeah, in the comics, he's actually, at least in one of them, he's a man-bat. He's basically a Nazi vampire. The issue I read that he was in, he drank a bunch of blood that was going to make all non-supers sterile. And basically, like, all non-Hydra, they were going to make them all sterile so the population would die eventually. This was all Zemo's plan. And Batroc had bombs strapped to himself, and he was going to blow himself up over the atmosphere and blow the blood everywhere. But Sam Wilson stopped him. So that's the kind of stuff you're missing out on, guys.
That's the kind of stuff that'll never make it to the movies.
No, instead they made him like some dumb little dude, like strong guy.
Imagine that pitch meeting if someone tried, how do we make this scene happen? The guy's a Nazi vampire, and he's going to drink a bunch of blood, and he's going to strap a bomb to
himself. Hey. You can't tell the plot of Morbius yet.
Oh, man. That is a Marvel movie, right? It's not a Sony movie.
I think that's a Sony movie, isn't it?
Is it? I don't know. I've not really seen Morbius mentioned in anything going on in the MCU other than that trailer, and I didn't know if that was because someone else was the ownership of it.
Marvel Entertainment and Columbia Pictures. Yeah. It's produced by Columbia Pictures. Nobody else wanted to do it. And it's going to be Jared Leto, so it's going to be weird.
It's going to be super weird. Kind of makes sense, right? I mean, again, it's a vampire. Jared Leto is like already a vampire, right?
So he's not going to be part of the MCU, I guess? This is just a standalone movie?
I don't guess so.
Oh, wait. It is Sony Pictures. I think Sony is Columbia.
Adam, have you? I'm completely on a tangent. Have you seen the trailer for Venom 2, Let There Be Carnage?
Nah, they actually come out with a trailer? Because I know that there's a lot of fan-made crap.
Yeah, a week ago. I'm watching it right now.
For real?
I think so.
Tyrese is going to be in Morbius. That's wonderful.
Oh, no. Never mind.
Yeah, I had a hard time believing that the trailer came out for that and it not be all over the place.
There's an announcement teaser. Came out April 21st. It's supposed to come out June 25th of this year, Adam.
Yeah, that's happening.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, any other thoughts on Falcon the Winter Soldier? I thought it was a really good little mini series. I wonder, I really want him to do more with like the scenario that they've set up with Sharon Carter and everything. I just, seeing the slate of movies that are coming out, I just don't think that there's going to be a lot of involvement with any of these characters. Then I seems like they'll all be like, you know, side characters.
Yeah. I was reading. I didn't hear you say.
All right. Well, I guess if we don't have anything else, say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody. See you later.
Thanks for listening. Go to diversion.fm to subscribe and listen weekly in your podcast player of choice. If you like the show, share it with a friend. Thanks again, and see you next week.